Okay, we're beginning here, six lines down on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. Gemara is discussing what the Mishnah had mentioned, that both Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, despite the fact that they disagree about who provides the Minchat Chavitin after the passing of the Kohen Gadol, nevertheless they do agree that it comes Shlema. Doesn't come anymore as Machatzita, but rather Shlema. Now the Gemara poses the question. Rabbi Yossi, fourth generation Amor, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the second generation Amor, Rabbi, Ma. What's the story here? Shlema b'shacharit, v'shlema ben arabayim. We say we don't split it up. It means that you bring a full Yitzaron in the morning, a full Asirita Ifa in the evening. Oh, now the Girsa that we have is Shlema b'shacharit, u'b'teila ben arabayim. Or does he bring the full thing in Shacharit and brings nothing ben arabayim? The original Girsa Od, you can see that up in the Mesorot HaShas, says was, oh, Mechsa b'shachrit, u'mechsa ben arabayim. You bring half in the morning and half in the evening. The problem is, that's exactly what the Kohen Gadol does. So then you would say the meaning of Shlema means you just bring the whole thing. The whole thing over the whole day, which is the equivalent of what the Kohen Gadol does. Obviously why the Girsa was changed is because that's not what it sounds like from the Mishnah or from the Limud of what we brought yesterday. And the Daimet Shlema, they mean something different than what the Kohen Gadol does. So that's the question. No answer to the question. But then the Gemara says, Kad Tehei Pshitale. It's the equivalent in the Bavli of Imtim Salomar. Imtim Salomar, if Rabbi Yochanan would come to the conclusion that Shlema v'Shlema, that he brings a whole one in the morning, and he brings a whole one in the evening, then, leave out the next three words, they're not relevant. Shloshet lugim mahein. What's the din with regards to the three lug shemen that come along with it? We're talking about the flour, the solet. So with regards to the solet, that's where the drusha is, that you bring in a full and not a half. But there's also oil that goes with that. That oil that is normally shloshet lugim, one and a half in the morning, one and a half in the afternoon, what's the din there? Shloshet lugim shacharit, or shloshet lugim ben arbaim. Do we also double the oil? So therefore there's three lug in the morning and three lug in the afternoon. Or, logu mechsa shacharit, velogu mechsa ben arbaim. Or do you do it like normal? Now again, if you were to look at the parallel language up above, then it would say that it was mechsa and mechsa. Although over here you could argue that the demand, or where the pasuk tells us that you have to bring it shlema, is in reference to the solet. The other items, you're just extrapolating. For the fact that you doubled the solet, therefore maybe you should double the oil. Or maybe not. Maybe the oil is not governed by the pasuk of the solet. So that's Rabbi Yossi's question. So then, Amar Rabbi Chizkia. So Rabbi Chizkia extends the question and says, Of Hadatz Rechile. And also this, I would ask. This too, I would say, if Rabbi Yochanan concluded it was Shlema and Shlema, which is, Shnei Kamatzim Mahein. The two Kamatzim, what's the din? The kometz is the levona that comes with the minchat chavitin. Do you put on one kometz of levona, or do you put on two kamatzim of levona now? So shnei kamatzim v'shacharit, u'shnei kamatzim ben arbaim. Do I put two in the morning now, two in the evening? Oh, maybe it's kometz achad b'boger b'shacharit v'kometz achad ben arbaim. The same question, which is, do we double the levona here? Is it proportional to the solet, or does that stay in place? I mean, since the pasuk is by the solet, it only affects the solet, everything else remains intact. Or, the question is, does it follow? We can extrapolate from the solet to the other items here. But, we're gonna see now that Rabbi Yose doesn't accept Chizkiya's question. Amar Rabbi Yose, kolom lamdu lekometz. Here, lo means ella. And here, the Gemara has minchat choteh, which is very difficult to say. We don't learn out, but rather from yilechem hapanim. Don't we learn out the minchat chavitim from the lechem hapanim? You can see the Gemara changes the girsa to that as well. So, mal halan shnei kamatzim. Just like by lechem hapanim, there's two kamatzim of livona, one in each of the bazikhim. So too, afkan shnei kamatzim. Also over here, there's two kamatzim of livona. And there is no question. I mean, there's two over the day, and that's it. There's no more than two kamatzim of libona. So what Rabbi Yossi says back to Rabbi Chizkia is, by solet, we ask a question. Now we're assuming that, okay, we concluded by solet that it's shlema, shlema, you double the solet, because you're bringing one in the morning, shlema in the morning, shlema in the afternoon. I have a question regarding the shemen. You ever think that the question also applies to libona? I'm telling you that there is no question by libona because of the source. Where is libona derived from? Not derived from the Minchat Chavitin itself, but rather from an external source, which is Lechem Apanim. So there's no reason there to change the Levona, because the Levona is guided, anchored by Lechem Apanim, and that hasn't changed. So therefore, I think the Levona stays in place and doesn't move, and that's why I think you're wrong, Rabbi Chizkiya, because I don't think there's a question by the Levona. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says back to him, I'm not sure that you're right. Amar Rabbi Chizkiya responds and says, Klum lamdu shloshet liugim lo, meaning ella again, lo, mitamid shel ben arabayim. It's probably not necessarily the right girsa here, because it's the same in tamid shel arabayim as it is by the tamid shel shachar. This is a minchat nisachim that comes along with the tamid shel ben arabayim or tamid shel shacharit. So you can change the girsa either to ella mitmidin, that's one possibility, or ella miminchat midin. It's probably the right girsa over here, that the leimud for the question that you're asking, which is regards to the shemen, the derivative or the guide for shemen is also an outside source, which is the minchat nisachim of the tmidim. So if you're saying to me that the levona is anchored because it comes from lechem apanim, then I'll say to you the shemen's anchored because it comes from the minchat nisachim of the tmidim. Malahalan shloshalugim, avkan shloshalugim. I'll make the same drush, which is just like there it's three log, so too over there it's three log. So now the girs over here is very difficult. I'll read you what I think it is in the Gra, so it says something along these lines, which is, Taman Srichale Vav Shitale. Over there you have a question, and over here you don't. What he's saying to him basically is, how is it that by the Levona, you're certain that it's this way, and by the Shemen, you're uncertain? I'm telling you that the information's all the same by both of them. They're both coming from outside sources. They're both anchored by outside sources. So why should there be one case where you have a question, one case where you don't have a question? Either you do have a question, or you don't have a question. So that's what Rabbi Chizkiah says, that's why Bilavona, I have the same question. If you have a question by Shemin, which he agrees is there's a question by Shemin, I think the same question applies by Livona. We don't have any conclusion in the Gemara, but number one is Rabbi Yochanan's question about how the Shlema works. And then built on top of that, we have Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Chizkiah, who are trying to determine whether that question expands beyond the Solit to just the Shemin, or to the Shemin and the Livona. And now we move on to the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, the second, third generation Amora, b'shem Rabbi Yonatan, who's a first generation Amora, b'dinaya shimaluba, b'hein gezru shelo yimaluba. What do you mean? You think that mina Torah, you can be Moel in the Efer HaPara, and then they came along and said, oh, no Me'ilah. So it's a rhetorical question, but basically saying, how could it be that Chachamim say there's no more Me'ilah by the ashes of the Efer HaPara? The Torah says there is Me'ilah by the Efer HaPara, the Chachamim can't undo that. They can't change that. So what are you talking about here, that the Chachamim are removing Me'ilah from the Efer HaPara? So Gemara says, we have a limud. This is the limud that I mentioned yesterday, which is Dane, because we have a Braita, Chatadhi. If you think about the Parah Adumah really should not have a din of Me'ilah whatsoever. The Parah Adumah, none of the Avodah is done in the Mikdash. It's one of the things that's the Amichutz LeMikdash. It's done outside. It's done up on Har HaZeitim, looking back towards the Mikdash. So since it's done outside of the Mikdash, you would think that it has no din in Me'ilah. Long comes the Pasuk and calls it a Chatat. So the Gemara says, because it calls it a Chatat, therefore it has a din in Me'ilah. So even that's a Chiddush, that the Paraduma itself has Me'ilah. But then the Gemara Darshan's about that, it's Chatat Hi, that's Melameit, Shemolim Ba, Moalim, Vein Molim Be'efara. That limud is limited to when it's still the Parah Aduma. But once you've done Nasem Mitzvato, what's the mitzvah of the Parah Aduma? So turn it into ashes. So once that's done, it loses its Shem Me'ilah. So here you have a Braita that's clearly telling you that Midoraita, there is no Me'ilah by the Efer Parah Aduma. You could read the question simply before he goes, oh wait, Mina Torah was Asur and the Chachamim came and made it Mutar, but we know that it's not Asur Mina Torah. Although this is part of the question as a whole. Which is the first question is, if it's Doraita, then what are you doing? And if not, look at the Braita, it's not Doraita, then what are Chachamim removing? So the answer is, Amar Rabbi Bo. So Rabbi Bo, third generation Amora, says, Birishona, Hayu, Mishtak Shekin, which is the same thing as Mishach Shekin. They used to rub it. Ba, Vnotimta, Agave Makutehem. And they placed it on their wounds. As I mentioned yesterday, that they used to use it as a salve for their wounds. Ashes in general were considered to be medicinally efficacious for wounds. In addition to that, if you add on top of that ashes of the Parah Adumah, then they certainly are going to be good. So they were misappropriating the ashes, being mekil, mezalzel, in the ashes of the Parah Adumah, so they wanted to stop that. So therefore, v'gazru, shimaluba. So they made a gzeirah, that would be mi'ilah. So the whole institution of mi'ilah by the Parah Adumah is midrabanan. They instituted a gzeiro, making it that you are mo'el when you touch the Efer in order to stop people being mizalzel in the Efer HaPara. Then, kevan shenigderu, gazru shelo yimaluba. Once they saw people weren't misusing it anymore, misappropriating it, they removed the din of Mi'ilah. So you have two stages. You have a stage where the Chachamim institute Mi'ilah in the Efer, and then you have a stage where they remove it. Our Mishnah is talking about that stage where they remove the Gzeira of Mi'ilah and Efer HaParah. What's interesting here, when I explained the Mishnah to you, I explained to you based on the Bavli. This is the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says they put the Gzeira in place because they were using it medicinally, and then they removed it because the people would then realize the significance or the chashivut of the Efer HaParah, and they stopped doing it. So then they didn't need the Gzeira anymore. The Bavli says that they ran into a problem the other way, which is once they put the Gzeira in place, the Kohanim were reluctant to sprinkle on people that were suffek tmei meitim because of the chashash of mi'ilah. So therefore you ran into a problem that the suffek tumatameit, they weren't getting properly taken care of. The Chachamim removed it because of the problem that it caused. That's the way the Bavli reads it. But the Yerushalmi reads it simply as the Gzeira succeeded in creating a new view towards the Efer HaParah. Based on that, they removed the Gzeira. Right now, Valak Kinin. So here you have an interesting, the Gemara quotes here something that's not necessarily relevant, but it's the style of Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi will bring down the whole Memra, not just the part that's relevant to us over here. Brings down something that we mentioned before. Our Mishnah simply says that if Sapak comes along and something happens to the kinim, they, for instance, they are sulot, that he has to supply them. He has to replace them. We had two deot, the day of that it was brought out of the monies of the tzibur. The other day was, no, that the Rabbi Yossi's day, which is it's out of the Sapak's pocket. He's got to pay for it, it's part of his contractual obligations to supply it. Now we also had this earlier in the Masechta, and that's what the Gemara is quoting over here, Aisha hazot v'mahi mechaperet. This woman, how does she get her kapara? Now this is the case where the money fell between the box of the kinim and the box of the gozle ola. And we say, well, in that case where it's mechsa, mechsa goes to the gozle ola. So Mary said, okay, well, how does a chatat become an ola? It's not beit din. Well, what about the woman? The woman who put her money in that box of the kinim, how does she get her mechusere kapara? How does she get her kapara taken care of here if the money doesn't go there? So we answered there according to Rabbi Yossi, which is, Rabbi Yitzchak, the second, third generation Amora, Tanai, Beitin Hu. This is a part of the conditions of Beitin, that I'm a sapeket akinim, who I'm a sapeket apsulot, veta ovdot. So that he explies not only the psulot, but he also applies the ovdot. So here you have both. It's both these psulot, the ovdot, and included in that is also these situations where you have a sapek, where the money was in between, and one of them went to an olah, which is fine. You probably have a chatat. So any chatat that comes with safek from the birds, they're going to be responsible for if it has to do something with the public interest. And they're going to be on the hook for it. So obviously that was expensive for the sapak, but yet, they obviously, it was worth it to them because of the volumes, because of the amount of business and the ability to...
Prestige.
That's right. Exactly. The prestige of having the, we serve the mikdash on their products. Right, that was enough to allow, make it worthwhile for them to do it. So therefore the Gemara brought this whole member down to bring you the Braita that says that's the din that we have of Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah. It's not just about psulot, it's also about avudot. So it's psulot, avudot, and not beyond that, even more than avudot, even when the money is in between the two canisters, that of Gozle Ola and Kinim, there the Sapak is responsible for it, according to Rabbi Yossi. Alright, now we go. Again, the last parak in the Shkalim. Kol arukim anim tzaim. All saliva, spit, mucus that is found by Yerushalayim tehorim. It's considered to be a tahor. Chutz mishel shuk elyon, except for the upper marketplace. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir's position. Rabbi Yose Omer, b'shar kol yimot hashana. We're talking about the rest of the year. The saliva, the liquids that you find, some sort of discharge that you find in the middle of the road is tmeim. Shibitzdadim tahorim, that which is on the side is tahor. We'll see why the Gemara will explain this. Bushata regel, on the regel, shibitzdadim tahorim, all that liquid or discharge that you find in the middle of the road is tahor. Shibitzdadim, that which is on the side is tmeim. Mivnei, shuan muatim istalkim litzdadim, because the fewer move to the side. So during the regel, everybody's tahor. So who's in the minority? The Tmeim. So the Tmeim moved to the side. The rest of the year, it seems that the Tmeim were the majority and the Tohorim were the minority. So the Tohorim are the ones that traverse the Rishut HaRabim on the sides. And for that reason, the Halakha will turn out to be based on that. And Rabbi Yosef, that depends what time of year and where, what location within the Rishut HaRabim. Kol HaKelim HaNimtzaim B'Yerushalayim Derech Yirida LeBeit HaTvila. If you find them in Yerushalayim on the descent, on the way down to the mikveh, tameim. V'derech aliyah, on the way out, tehorim. Shalo kiridatam aliyatam. Because they don't go down to the mikveh the same way that they come up from the mikveh. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Right, so David's mentioning that if you go to Yerushalayim today, you can see in the mikvaot that they opened up around the Harabayit area, that those mikvaot actually have a line down the middle of plaster, a little wall. It's not very high, but indicating from the right to the left. And based on that, some speculate that that's what was spoken about in this Mishnah. That's Derech Yerida and Derech Aliyah are on the stairs of the mikveh. If someone left kelim on the stairs of the mikveh, which side did you find them on? Did you find them on the right side, which means it's going down? Find them on the left side, which is the right side coming up, and then they would be considered to be torim. Some say that. Others say that, no, that they were actually, the entrance and exit of the mikveh were narrow areas, narrow roads, and you didn't want to mix the torim and the tameim. So tameim came in on a one-way street, and the torim left on a one-way street. There's evidence to both sides, because we do find these mikvot only in Yerushalayim in that way, of the Yerida and Aliyah with the split down the middle. On the other hand, it's not all the mikvot. They found hundreds of mikvot there, and it's only usually the ones that were found in people's private houses that had that, and not all of the mikvot have that. So that would bring up the question, why isn't that all the mikvot have it? So here others want to suggest that it has to do with the actual direct pathways or roads that took down to the mikveh versus coming out of the mikveh. Divrei Rabbi Meir, that was Rabbi Meir's position. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kulan Torim. Everything, all the Kelim and Yerushalayim are Torim, similar to what Rabbi Meir said by the Rook before. This is what Rabbi Yossi says about the Kelim. Chutz, there are three utensils that are that way. Asal, Famagrifa, Vahamiritza. The sal is the basket. The magrifa is a pitchfork or some sort of shovel-like mechanism. And a miritza is a metal bar that has a sharp end to it. It's usually used as a chisel for breaking stone, a smashing stone. It's like a pickaxe, the metal chisel that you hit to open up the rock. You know how when you see people working with rock or stone, they're hitting a metal. So what's the problem with these? Because they are miyuchadim likvarot. These were used in burial. They were used for moving the bones of the individuals after they passed away to move them over to their permanent burial place. So they used to have the basket to put the bones into, the magrifat to pick up the bones, and the miritza was to break the stones. Whether it was to break the stones for the kever, to open up the kever, or others suggest that it has to do with the golel. The stone that was used to block it once they were buried in there, they used this makevet to break the stones that held it in place or to help move it along. They used wedged underneath to move it along. That was the miritza. The miritza was something that helped you turn that wheel, the golel. They have other utility, but they're also used in the burial or with tumah. And therefore, the assumption is that those kelim probably would be tameh. So then, sakin, this we should recognize from psachim, because we brought this down in psachim, which is a sakin. Shinim tzeit biyudalit. Find a knife on the 14th, shochet ba miyad. You don't have to worry, it's definitely tahor, because nobody would leave the knife around. Not making it tahor by the 14th. You need it on the 14th to do shchita, and therefore you can assume it's tahor. Bishlosha asar, if you find it on the 13th, means the day before Erev Pesach, then shoneh umadbil. He has to go. Now, shoneh here, different interpretation. Shoneh umadbil means he has to put in the mikveh again. That's one possibility, that he has to put in the mikveh again. The problem with that is, the reason he's putting in the mikveh is because he thinks it didn't go in the mikveh. So what does it mean he's putting in the mikveh again? Because the problem is we assume that the person who owned it knows that he can still have time for Harav Shemesh, for the sun to set on the day before, I mean on the 13th. So he could take it to the mikveh on that day. If you find out the day, it's possible it wasn't at the mikveh yet. But the way Rambam reads it, and others read it, is that Shoneh Madbil means Shoneh Haza'ah. You do Haza'at Paraduma on it. Maybe this was the seventh day of the Tarami Tumata Meit for this knife. So you have to get it sprinkled on. That's Shoneh. That's the second sprinkling, because you do it on the third and the seventh days. This is the second sprinkling that goes on there, so that's Shoneh. And then Madbil goes to the mikveh for Harav Shemesh, so that'll go to the mikveh and then have Harav Shemesh. That's what it means, Shoneh Madbil. On the 13th, you get it sprinkled on and taken to the mikveh, and then you wait for the sun to set, and it'll be ready for you on the 14th. Kupitz, the hatchet, bezeh bezeh, Shoneh Madbil. Doesn't matter if you found it on the 13th or the 14th, then you have to be shonen, might be the same way we would explain it before. You have to have azad, paraduman, and plus you have to take it into the mikveh because the hatchet is not used on the 14th. First of all, you don't shech the animal with it, the Karban of Pesach, and in addition to that, you don't even need it for the Karban of Pesach because you can't break the bones of the Karban of Pesach. So you wouldn't necessarily use the hatchet to open up or separate the limbs of the Karban of Pesach. And besides that, you don't. The Pesach is roasted in one shot. So you're not going to cut it up anyway before you take it to the meal. Right, so that the Gemara asked them, Sochim, about the Shalmei, the Chagiga Judala that comes with it. Right, so there the Gemara says that was one of the proofs. The Gemara says it has the same din of Lo Etchem Lo Tishbu Bo like the Pesach. Right, that's the proof from here because you don't have the hatchet's not ready. If you thought the Chagiga Judala needed a hatchet, then it should be Tahor already. The answer might be also that you still don't need it until night. Since you don't need it until nightfall, then maybe then it was okay, or the Gemara there talked about it being Shabbat. It was, Erev Pesach was filed out on Shabbat, which the Mishnah discusses also. And that was, the whole sugi over there was dealing with exactly that question, is whether the Chagigat Yudal looks like the Korban HaPesach. Right? Chal ba'asar liyot b'Shabbat. If Erev Pesach is on Shabbat, shochet ba'miyad. Then you can use it right away. That means, even if you found it on the 13th, then it would already have gone 14th. You can use it right away because of the knife. And the same is by the Kupitz now. The kupitz will also take on the status like that because the kupitz can't be brought on Shabbat to the mikveh. He has to do it on the 13th. So that means that the knife and the kupitz will have the same din over here when it's the 14th falls out, Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbat. Bitted vav, if he finds either of them on the 15th, that's on Yom Tov itself, that's even when Erev Pesach is not Shabbat, then shochet ba'miyad. You can use the hatchet or the knife because both of them had to go to the mikveh. You can't take them to the mikveh on Yom Tov itself, so it's clear that they took care of that on Erev Yom Tov. Nimtzak Shura. You find the kupitz tied to the sakin, to the knife. Arehike sakin. Then it takes on the same din as the sakin. Because then the assumption is that if they were together, if the sakin went to the mikveh, so did the kupitz. And that's why it keeps them together. He wouldn't keep a tame kupitz together with his tahor and knife. The fact that they're attached already gives you some indication that they're both taken care of. They both went to the mikveh already. And now we have Rabbi Avin b'shem Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. So now some have the gears here that's Rabbi Simon, not Rabbi Avin, because of the subsequent memrot are all Rabbi Simon. So some have that as the gears up here, but we have Rabbi Avin, third, fourth generation Amor, b'shem Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Rabbi Shua ben Levi is the first generation Amor in Eretz Yisrael. Katsran shel Nachrim hayasham. What is the reason that the Shuk HaElyon is considered to be Tameh, or the liquids or discharges that are found there are Tamei, whereas all of Yerushalayim is considered to be Tahor. So he says there was a Katsran Shel Nachrim Hayasham. The Rabban Eidah translates Katsran as a Koves, which is sometimes the way it's used in the Bavli. A Katsran is a launderer. Since there was a non-Jewish launderer up there, the problem was that the Chachamim were Gozer on the Nachrim, that they have a din of Zav. Since they have a din of Zav, then we have a problem up in that area because of this known non-Jewish launderer that's up in the Shuk HaElyon. That's the way the Karban Eidah explains it. But generally, when the Yerushalmi talks about a launderer, in that case, it uses katsar and not katsran. It doesn't have the nun at the end. It only uses the term katsar. On the other hand, the katsran might be derived from the Latin word, which means a fortress or a legion or squadron of soldiers. And it might have been where the Roman soldiers were garrisoned in the Shuk HaElyon, in the upper part of the city, the higher part of the city. And that's what it may mean over here, that the Katsran Shel Nachrim Hayasham, which is that the Romans were present there. That's where they kept their army, that's where they kept their troops. And therefore, that's the problem up there, because now you have all these non-Jewish troops that are up in that area, and that's why you have to worry about the discharges in that area. Amar Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina, first generation Amora, says, Arudot Hayu Nocharin Bi Yerushalayim. Arudot are wild donkeys. They used to be nocher. Nocher is a way of killing the animal by tearing open the whole front of it. That's what the Gemara discusses when it discusses in the Chulin, the alternative to Shechita, talks about nocher. And how do they kill the animal? It's taking the knife and slicing it straight up the front. It's obviously not kosher in terms of Shechita, but if you don't require Shechita, can you do nechira? That's the question. Nechira comes from the nocher, which is the nostrils, which was you cut up the air pipe all the way up to the nostrils. So here it says that these arudot, these kamei bar, were basically slaughtered all over Yerushalayim. Vayu olei regalim mishta'akim bedam ad gar kavodeihem. And the olei regalim were up to their knees in blood because they were all over the place. These things were killed everywhere. Question is, why were they killed? The Karban Eidah says that it was the tzorach arayot shel melech. It was for the lions of the king. It was to feed the lions of the king. And so they, whether it was the soldiers or whoever were the servants of the king, were going around and killing them like this to get their food for the lions that the king kept. But then it could be that they were wild donkeys that were causing problems in Yerushalayim, and the troops are there. They killed them. They wanted to kick him. They wanted to get rid of him, call in the pet control, and they came in and they killed them all. But then there was blood all over the place. Now what we're talking about here is Dam Nivela. So here you have Dam Nivela, and here the Olei Regalim are walking in Dam Nivela. And then we have a statement which was added in later, which is, came for the Chachamim and they did not ask for it. It's true of the story, but this was added in later, which is that they asked the Chachamim say it's Tahor, the Dam Nevela is Tahor, and the Olei Regalim have no problem over here. That is the conclusion of the statement above, because that's why he's bringing the case down, to show you that the Olei Regalim were walking through with Yerushalayim up to their knees in blood, and they came and brought their korbanot. There wasn't any issue whatsoever because it's Dam Nevela. The addition just made it more formal. They asked the Chachamim, and they didn't stop them. So now we have Rabbi Simon b'shem Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. So Rabbi Simon, we know, is Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi in Yerushalayim, second, third generation Amora, and the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, the first generation Amora, and that's why I said to you before, some changed the first statement to Rabbi Simon, because here we have a series of his memorot from him in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Levi. Maseh bepirda shel beit Rabbi. This should be familiar to you. This entire Gemara was found back on Daf Tet. The whole sequence of the Gemara is brought over here. It's brought over here because we just said that Dam Nevela is Tahor. And we had that discussion back on Daf Tet as to whether Dam Nevela is really Tahor. It is a machloket, and the Gemara is going to discuss it now. There was a case with the Pirdaz, a mule in Beit Rabbi, Shemeta, it died. Vitiru ad Dameha, Mishum Nevela, or Mishem Nevela. They said that the Dam is Tahor, it doesn't have a din of Nevela. Dam Nevela is Tahor. Rabbi Elazar ben Padat, the second generation more in Eretz Yisrael, Shal the Rabbi Simon. He asked Rabbi Simon, who is the Bala Memra here in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Ad Kama, how much blood is still considered to be Tahor? Is there a limit? Is there a quantity limit, a volume limit of blood that it remains Tahor? Is it always Tahor? Vlo Agivei. He didn't respond to him. He didn't address it. Shal the Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Then he asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi directly, and Amalei, Ad Revi'it Tahor. Yoter Mikan Tamei. Up to Revi'it is considered to be Tahor. Above that level is Tamei. Uba'ash the Rabbi Elazar delo chazule Rabbi Simon Shmuato. And Rabbi Elazar was offended. Ba'ash, we talked about then also, Uba'ash Ayor, means that it rotted, it was spoiled. He was upset. He took offense to the fact that Rabbi Simon didn't respond to him. Now, whether he thinks that Rabbi Simon didn't respond to him just because he didn't feel like it or it was beneath his dignity, or that's why he's upset about it, it might have been that Rabbi Simon didn't know the answer to the question. So he poses the question directly to Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, but obviously Rabbi Elazar ben Padat took offense to that. But what we see here is that there is a limit to the dam. The dam, the vela, is only to or if it's less than a revi'it. Above a revi'it, it would be tamei. The reason for that is based on the fact that if you take a revi'it dam and it coagulates to the size of a kazayit. So since it coagulates to the size of a kazayit, now you have equivalent of a kazayit of nevela. So that's the reason that revi'it becomes a problem. So now the Gemara tells over the story that we saw back on Daf Tet, which is Rabbi Bivai, a third generation Amor, Rabbi Yotiv, Matne Hadein Uvda, was talking about this case. This case that Rabbi Simon brought in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, who's relating this case. Amarle Rabbi Yitzchak Barbisna. So Rabbi Yitzchak Barbisna, third, fourth generation Amorah, says to him, either it's unnecessary here, it says Ad Kama, and then Amarle, and then it sounds like he responded, the original Gersos just say, Ad Revi'it Tahor, Termi Kein Tameh. He poses a question, he says, until Revi'it is Tahor, more than that is Tameh, he's questioning, is there a limit here? Ubat Be. And by Vai, well, either Bat Be means either kicked him, or Bat Be means that he was unfriendly to him. He dismissed him. He pushed him away. Not physically, but with his words or with his motions, he pushed him away. Amarle Rabbi Zvika. Rabbi Zvika says to Rabbi Vai, I don't understand. Begin to have a shalucha ad bait be? Because he asks a question, you get upset at him, you kick him. Doesn't seem to be the proper response for the question that he just posed. Says Amarle, begin to lo have a dati be. It's because I'm not at ease. Since I'm not at ease, therefore I responded this way, maybe inappropriately, but I wasn't at ease and that caused me to respond in this way. I was feeling anxious. And then anxiety makes me act this way. Why is he anxious? The Amar Rabbi Chanin. Rabbi Chanin, the third generation of Morah, says, Ve'yu chayecha tzvuim lecha mineged. Your life will be hanging in the balance, meaning that you'll have a safek whether you're going to survive. Zehu shlokeach lo chitim l'shana. This is what we saw before. Someone who purchases 1 year in advance his produce. He doesn't have his own ability to produce grains. He has to buy his grains, the bread, which is, again, the main sustenance, the main mizonot of individuals at that time. And he's buying it from outside parties. He doesn't have his own supply. But he's buying a year in advance. So he's safe for the year, but he doesn't know what's going to be next year. Because if the crops aren't great, everybody keeps their own, and he has nothing to get, because he doesn't have his own. You'll be fearful day and night, which is a more extreme type of fear that you won't survive. This is someone who buys from the Sidki. This is from like a wholesaler. Someone who buys, not in bulk, for a year, but buys on a weekly basis, buys more than just a day at a time or less than a year at a time. So he's buying in quantities, but not huge quantities. So again, here he has multiple times where he's going to run into this problem during the year, which has to keep, right, he has to keep resupplying himself, and there's a safek whether there'll be supply there. V'lo tamin b'chayecha. And then you won't believe that you'll survive. Zehu shalukeach min ha-paltor. This is one who takes from a paltor. Paltor can either be from the word platar, platar, which is the baker, because they use those flat boards, the bakers. Or paltor can be a storekeeper, a large storekeeper. He says, and that's what I do. I go buy daily. I go to the bakery every day, and that's where I get my bread. I can't afford to buy in advance. I don't have my own. And so I'm buying daily, so I don't know if I'm going to have food the next morning. It's not like today, as I said before, that the bakeries always have fresh bread the next morning. Over there, there was a possibility that there'd be no bread there the next morning. In that case, he doesn't have any food. He doesn't have any mizonot. He says, I live in that, with that anxiety. I live with that fear. And that's why I'm not at ease. And I responded maybe in such a manner. So my kedon, what's the din? So, Hayd Rabbi Ushua ben Pitora, or it's Rabbi Ushua ben Pitera, third generation Tano, Adam nevelot shu tahor. This is an idiot. He says, Dam nevela is tahor. That's it. So it sounds like from Rabbi Ushua ben Pitora, Rabbi Ushua ben Pitera, that you would say, Dam Nevela is Tahor, similar to what the Chachamim said when the Olei Regel were up to their knees in Dam Nevela. Tahor. Tahor means Tahor the Gamre. But that's the problem for us, because we're talking about Amoraim over here. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's qualification of the case of Rabbi are Amoraim. How are they going to deal with this Tano who's saying that Tahor means Tahor the Gamre? So Ma'u Tahor. We're going to reinterpret the word Tahor. Tahor means Tahor Melach Shir. Halitamot Mitame. It's two different things. Yes, it can convey Tuma. If you get up to a revit of Dam, it will convey Tuma like Dam Nevela or like a Nevela. On the other hand, it's not classified as a liquid. Since it's not classified as a liquid, it cannot be Machshir other objects to the Kabbal Tuma. It cannot prime other objects to have them receive Tuma. You need one of the seven liquids, Yajachad Dam. And this Dam doesn't qualify because this is not Dam HaNefesh. And Dam HaNefesh is the only thing that's classified as a liquid. So this doesn't have a din of a liquid to be makshir. It only has it's a din of dam that it's dam nevela. That's the difference here. So tahor here, it doesn't mean tahor from tuma. I mean tahor, it won't prime other things. It won't be makshir, the kabbal tuma for other things. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Tamanta nina, and we have a mission over there in makshirin. Dama sheretz mitamei kibsaro. The blood of a sheretz is mitamei just like its flesh. The blood and the flesh are the same din. Mitamei, it causes tuma, conveys tuma, veino makshir. But it's again not considered to be a liquid to be makshir the kabbal tuma. And there's nothing else like it. Well, guess what? You just have Dam Nevela that's exactly like it. Dam Nevela conveys Tuma like the Basar, and it also is not Makshir the Kabbal Tuma. So what do you mean there's nothing like it? There's something exactly like it called Dam Nevela. So now Gemara says, no. Ein lanu ki yotzebo kishir tumato. Aval damo mitamei kipsaro. We don't have anything that's like it with regards to the Shi'ur. We do have something like it that the Dam has the same din as the Basar. So the difference will be the Dam of a Nevela has the same din as the Basar. The dam of the sheretz has the same din of the basar. That they are similar with. What's different between them, and what's unique about the dam of sheretz is that you have the same shi'ur for the basar as you have for the blood. The shi'ur for a sheretz is ki'adasha, the size of a lentil seed. That means it doesn't matter if it comes in basar form or in dam form. It doesn't matter if it's a liquid or a solid. Ki'adasha is the threshold for tuma. That means that possibly by the blood, if it coagulates the blood, if you took a lentil size, it would be less than a lentil size when it coagulates in the solid form. Nevertheless, it's tamei, even though it's not going to get to that solid as a lentil size. And that's the chumrah of sheretz. Chumrah of sheretz is that a lentil is the measurement for the blood and for the basar. Well then, by dam nevela, it's true that the dam is mitamei kebasar, but the shear is different. Here, the revi'it is only working because it coagulates to the size of the kezayit. It has to reach the solid state of a kezayit. You can't just measure a kezayit of liquid and say, that's enough, I'm done. That's not the case. It has to be a revit, because the revit ends up being a kezayit. And so that's why it's different, and that's how we would explain the Mishnah Makshirin as to why the Vela is different, or Sheretz is unique in this way. So then we have Amar Rabbi Yosei. Others have the Girsa as being Rav Yosef. Now you'll see why later on, why it might make sense to say it as Rav Yosef, but it's called Rabbi Yosei. Here we have Pligi Batrain Amoraim. It's a machlokut Amoraim. Chadamar Tamei v'chadamar Tahor. One says Tamei and one says Tahor. Some of the Girsaot don't have this in it because it's unnecessary. We just saw that. We know that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi thinks that it is Tamei. And we know that we have Rabbi Chanina by the Arudot who says that it is Tahor the Gamre. So, manda mar tamei. The one who thinks it's tamei, ke Rabbi Yehuda. He is holding like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda does not appear in our Gemara over here. Rabbi Yehuda appears in the first Mishnah in Perek Hay of Idiot. Over there he says, he explains the machlok between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, and over there he says that Dam Nevela is Tameh. So whoever the Amora is that subscribes, who we know here is Rabbi Shua ben Levi, and all those that are quoting him to qualify the event by Rabbi's house, they all subscribe to the position of Rabbi Yehuda. But now we have a Tana, who's saying basically that Dam Nevela is Tameh. Another one, the ones who say that it is Mandamar Tahor, anybody says it's Tahor, subscribes to Rabbi Yeshua ben Petor, Rabbi Yeshua ben Beteira, who is the Mishnah in Adiot, who says that he testified that Dam Nevela is Tahor, and Tahor means Tahor the Gamre, like the Pashtut Mishnah. So Amalei Rav Abduma. So Rav Abduma, some have the gears of Rav Avudma, but it's Rav Dimi. Rav Dimi, who is the third, fourth generation Amora in Bavel, Demin Nechuta, he's one of the descenders. Descenders means that he left Eretz Yisrael for Bavel. And we know that in the Bavli he appears many times. Kiata Rav Dimi. When Rav Dimi came. Or Kiata Ravin. Rav Dimi and Ravin were coming from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. And they were bringing with them the Memorot of Rabbi Yochanan. So many times they bring the Memorot of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was the major Amora at that time in Eretz Yisrael. And so they are bringing those Memorot of Rabbi Yochanan to Bavel. Now from the Bavli, it sounds like Rav Dimi and Ravin were going back and forth. Over here in the Yerushalmi, it sounds like he made one trip. He left Eretz Yisrael and went to Bavel, and he remained in Bavel. But both of them, when they come to Bavel, Rav Dimi and Ravin bring these memorot of Rabbi Yochanan, and that's how in the Gemara and the Bavli, we get many of the questions or many of the statements of Shmot or Rabbi Yochanan come from them reporting to us what came from Eretz Yisrael. And that's what's being said over here. That is min l'chuta, Rav Dimi, who came down to Bavel. Now it sounds like from this that he was talking to whoever it was, and that was Rav Yosef. So it would make sense that Rav Yosef was the Amora who said this, because it sounds like Rav Dimi is speaking to him in this upcoming statement. If it was Rabbi Yosef, it would depend which Rabbi Yosef in Eretz Yisrael, whether it was the early Amora or the later Amora. Later Amora would be more problematic, because then Rav Dimi wouldn't be speaking to him. The earlier Amora, it's not clear that he would have spoken to him either. That's why some people opt for Rav Yosef. It also could just be the imposition of the Gemara that makes it look like they're speaking, even though they never spoke. He says, V'yeot, that which Rabbi Yosef or Rav Yosef said makes a lot of sense, that he connected between the Amoraim's position and that of the Tanaim. Because the Rabbi Yehuda Moraino de Benesi Ahava. Rabbi Yehuda is the posek of the house of Rabbi, of the Nesti's house. So now, where was Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi? Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, who said that Dam Nevela is Tahor only up to Ravid, but above that's not. He was qualifying based on what he saw in Rabbi's house, by the Pir Dan Rabbi's house. So his evidence is from the case that happened in Rabbi's house. And guess what? Who's the posek in Rabbi's house? That's Rabbi Yehuda. And you just said to me that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi holds like Rabbi Yehuda. You just closed the circle. It makes a lot of sense. Because now Rabbi Shulman Levi, who saw the incident in Rabbi's house, knows that because the incident in Rabbi's house was governed by Rabbi Yehuda, who was the posek there. And so now when you tell me that Rabbi Shulman Levi, who says this, holds like Rabbi Yehuda, that's true. Because it makes a lot of sense. Because he saw an incident that was paskin by Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore he really is holding like Rabbi Yehuda. And so based on that, what you just lined up, the Amoraim with the Tanaim, I think makes a lot of sense. All right, Kol HaRokim. So we're talking about the Mishnah about the Rokim in Yerushalayim, the Kol HaRokim Arzei Horim. So it says, Lo chein amar Rabbi Yabau b'shem Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina. Didn't Rabbi Yabau, the third generation Amora, say in the name Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, the second generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael, Lo gazra l'rokim shebi Yerushalayim. They were never gozer on the Rok in Yerushalayim. All the Rok in Yerushalayim was Tahor. Now we have a problem because you have Rok in Yerushalayim that is Tameh. So the Gemara answers, Ha itmar alei. We already have mentioned before Rabbi Avin b'shem Rabbi Shua ben Levi. That's the first member that we brought in the Gemara over here. That Rabbi Avin, the third, fourth generation Amora, in the name of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, the first generation Amora, Katsran shel Nachrim Hayasham. So the Tuma here is because that was a unique circumstance within Yerushalayim. In general, Yerushalayim did not have Tuma in it. It was no Gzerat Tuma of Rokim in it. And it's only because of that unique situation, the Shuk HaElyon, that you had a Katsran there, whether that's a Koves Nachri, whether that's a garrison of soldiers, a fortress up there, that's why it had Tumah up there, but that was not the general principle. Now based on that, Rabbi Meir's position makes a lot of sense. Rabbi Yossi's position in the Mishnah, who said, no, it depends if you're in the middle of the road, the side of the road, also that doesn't make so much sense based on the solution that we're giving over here. Because Rabbi Yossi says there was a Gzeirah of Tumah in Yerushalayim. So now the Gemara goes on to continue and explain the position of Rabbi Yossi, what he meant by the middle and the outside, which is that we bring a braita. The braita says, "B'shar yimot ha'shana, ha'tmeim ha'alchim shibolet." The tmeim walk shibolet. Shibolet means front and center. Right? Like the shibolet is the head of the stalk. Meaning that you walk front and center right down the middle. V'ha tihorin me'alchim min atzad. And the tahor people walk on the side. Now the girsa here is flipped. You can see that in the gra as well, which is v'ha tmeim me'alchim stam. The tmeim walk v'tahorim arim lehen proshu. And the tahorim tell them stay away, push away. So in that case, what you have here is that tahorim are on the side, and the tmeim are walking all over the place, and tahorim are say proshu, you stay off away from us. B'shat haregel, during the regel, tahorim me'alchim shibolet. The tahorim walk in front and center. They're in the middle. But tmeim alchim in atzad, and tmeim on the side. But tmeim alchim stam, the tmeim are walking freely, vet tmeim omeim lehem proshu. And tmeim tell them, no, wait, if you're tmeim, they say stay away. So the question of whose obligation is to keep the other people away. When you're the majority, then you can walk in the middle, and you walk front and center. In addition to that, you're not the one who warns of the problem. The people are the minority have to warn the problems. In the case where it's Torim that are in the center, the Tzmeim have to warn them, don't come over. And the other way around is true as well. If the Tzmeim are the majority and the Torim walk on the side, they should tell someone in Samaria, people coming towards them, you know, stay away, I want to stay Tahor. Right now, B'chol HaKelim Nimtzim B'Yerushalayim are considered to be Torim. Lo Chein Amar Rabbi Yabo B'Shem Rabbi Yochanan. So now we have Rabbi Yabo, third generation more in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Lo Gazru Al Kelim B'Yerushalayim. There is no Gzeira on the Kelim in Yerushalayim. Because they were found on their way down to the mikveh, it's like muchacha milta. It's as if they're vaday tameh. Well, how else are you going to explain the fact that you have these kelim that fell on the way down to the mikveh? It's obvious that they are tmeim. So it's not gzeira even anymore. They're vaday tameh, and that's why those are considered to be tmeim. Okay, that's the end of that sugya. Again, that presents a problem in the Mishnah for the position of Rabbi Yossi, who says, Kulam chutorim chutz min asal magrifa miritza. Again, over there, Rabbi Yossi, if we say that there is no gzirat tmeim in Yerushalayim, but now we're saying, oh, that if it's on the derech Yehuda, it's muchacha milta, then why doesn't Rabbi Yossi hold like that? Obviously, he thinks it's not muchacha milta, but you have that different opinions. Both times, the Gemara gives explanation for the position of Rabbi Meir, or at least it's explaining Rabbi Yabau, who fits into Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, not like Rabbi Yossi in both cases. Now, the Gemara wants to know what would that meritza was in the Mishnah. What's the meritza? Abba Shaul, who is the third fourth generation Tana, says, Haya koreo tan siporin. He used to call them nails. Nails, like human nails, fingernails. Manda amar siporin. The one who calls them nails, fingernails, so yeah, domed siporin. It's like a nail, like a scoop. You have a long nail, it's like a scoop, something like that, or possibly sharp. And that's why they call it Tziporin. Manda ma meritza, sha meritza to Evan, because it moves the stone. The Beit HaKvarot was added in later. Meritza to Evan, because it moves the stone. It moves the stone because it's sharp, and you bang on it, and it causes the stone to move or chip. And that's why it's called the meritza. So those are the different explanations here, Tziporin and meritza. I told you that there's one other interpretation of meritza, which is that it's the utensil that was used to move the golel. Golel is the big circle stone that they used to put in front of the kvarim so the animals and people can get in there. The meritza was the wedge. Item or the wedge or the way that they moved the large golel. All right, kupitz. This is very interesting now. We're bringing down a braita. And the Mara brings the braita, and it's not clear what the context is over here and what it's trying to do. It says, Tane, we have a braita. Sakin kshuala harizukamota. If the knife is tied to the kupitz, it's just like the kupitz. It's the exact opposite of what we said in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if the kupitz is tied to the sakin, it has a din like a sakin. Over here it says if the sakin is tied to the kupitz, then it has a din like a kupitz. What is it telling you? Is it telling you like David just said? It's the same din. It's just telling you, okay, if they're tied together, then they have the same din. That's one possibility, and the Brit and the Mishnah don't argue. Or maybe there's a way to know which one is the primary versus the secondary. When you say it's tied to, does that mean the knife was the primary object and the kupitz is attached to it? Or was the kupitz the primary object and the knife is attached to the kupitz? In that case, the bright and the mishnah would be differentiated in that way, which is when it's attached to the knife, then the knife governs and everything is tahor. If it's attached to the kupitz, then the kupitz governs and you have a problem. You have to do shoneh matvil. So it's not clear why the Gemara brought the Braita, what the Gemara intends from the Braita, rather just to say here, oh, this is the same din, just said the opposite way, whether it's trying to differentiate between what is said in the Mishnah and what is said here in the Braita. And again, it's possible that the Mishnah might disagree entirely. Our Mishnah might say anytime it's attached, it has a din like a sakin, and the Braita might say anytime it's attached, it has a din like a kupitz. And so they might be disagreeing. It might be actually a machloket between them. All right, next Mishnah. Parochet shinit meit. Parochet becomes tamei, bevlada tuma. It's a lower level of tuma. Vlada tuma is actually only tuma derabanan, because kelim min haTorah can only accept ava tuma. So when you're talking about vlada tuma, you're already talking about tuma derabanan. But bilin ota bifnim. Then you put it into the mikveh, the parochet in the mikveh inside the azara. And then you hang it back up right away, and it drip dries there on the spot. If you get tamei through an avatuma, you take it out. You have to remove it from the azara, because you can't have avatuma there, and you put it in a mikveh outside. And then they spread it out in the chel. The chel is the area between the walls of the azara, the azrat nashim, and the soreg. It's the area between where there was the barrier of the outside of the azara, but there was another barrier around there, which was the last location where non-Jews were allowed to come up to. That area in between is called the chel. That chel is where they stretched it out, first of all, to dry. But number two is they need a Harav Shemesh. They have to wait for the sun to set. They have to go to the mikveh, so they need to leave it outside the azara until the Harav Shemesh. Now, the question here is like a dangling modifier. You're not sure what it's modifying. Is this a new statement in the Mishnah? Do you say, if it's a new parochet, and to put it into service, the Chamei goes there anytime you have a new parochet, they put it in the mikveh in case the Uman who did it or somebody was Tameh. And so we're talking about a new parochet coming into service, they put it in the mikveh, and then they put it up on the Itztaba. The Itztaba is the colonnade that was around on Har HaBayit. We knew from the Gemara of Sachim that talks about they used to put the Chalot Todah on there to tell the people whether it was the Zman Chametz was over or not. That's a Gabe Itztaba. It was a high area, a roof where everybody could see it. So they used to put it up there so everyone could see how beautiful this parochet is. That's one way to read it. Or the other way to read it is that it's a continuation of the previous statement, which is, if the parochet became Tamei Meit in the Migdash, it's already in service, came Tamei Meit. If it's a new one, it's more, recently was put up, it's more new, then instead of putting it on the chel, they put it out on the Itztaba. It could be one of those two. Ma'itach HaDashah could either be modifying the previous statement, or it's a totally new statement in the Mishnah, which is the new one. When it goes into service, you put it in the mikveh and you hang it out so everybody can see it. Shimon Gomel Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Skan, Parochet Ovya Tefach, it has a thickness of a Tefach, and then Al Shivim Ushtaim Nimim, we have here, other gears would have Nirim, Neregit. It was woven on 72 Nirim, the warp that is put across the loom. So when you string it across, he says there were 72 strings across over there that you sent the shuttle between. Al Kol Nima V'Nima, each one of these strings is Kaftal Chutin. It's made out of 24 ply. Arka Me'mama, the total size of the parochet is long 40 amot, Rachba 20 amot in width. And that's because that's the height of the Heichal is 40 amot, and the width of the Heichal is 20 amot. So in order to cover it, you need to be 40 high and 20 wide. Big tapestry. Umshmonim ushtaim ribo aita. Now here, again, we have a statement without any modification. It says it was made out of 820,000 what? Doesn't give you what it is. Most of the Rishonim interpret it to be 820,000 dinari kesef. That's how much it cost. To make it, it was so expensive. Ushtaim osim b'choshana. They made two a year. It was so heavy that they needed 300 kohanim to put it into the mikveh. Tomorrow we'll discuss what that means exactly. Naseh shtayim, they made two a year. Machloket about what that means. There's a machloket in the Gemara and the Bab, we'll get to in Yoma, as to whether in the separation between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim, was there only one parochet or there were two parochot? Because the Amat Traksin. In the Bayit HaRishon, there was an Amah that sat between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim because the thickness of the wall was an Amah. In second Beit HaMikdash, they didn't put up the wall there because the height of the Eichal was much higher, and they couldn't support a wall. In an Amma wide space, they couldn't support a wall that was that high. They couldn't put in a foundation that would work. So instead, they hung a parochet. That parochet, the question of they hung one parochet, or did they hang two parochot, which is that with an Amma space between them, which the Mishnayot and Yoma will see, describe that, that the Kohen Gadol passed between the two parochot. So now it says here, they made two parochot. What does that mean? Did they make two a year? Means they made the one, between the Kodesh and Kodeshim, they replaced the two that were there once a year. Or does two a year mean they placed the one between the Kodesh and Kodeshim plus the one at the entrance to the Heichal and to the Kodesh? They also replaced that one. That's the two that we're speaking about here. It's unclear which two that we're speaking about. Right now the Gemara. Ilu amar chut. Had the Torah tell us to make the parochet out of a chut, echad, I would have think that the strings are one ply. Kaful, and I used the term kaful, I would have thought, l'shnayim, two ply. Shazur, had it told me to spin it and then to twist it, I would have thought 3 ply. But now, what did the Torah say? It's made out of mashzar. Mashzar is the description given to it. Mashzar means l'shisha, 6 ply. So then, you take that, arba mikan. Mikan, probably the original word is minin. Arba minin, there are 4 pipes. Hayasim v'arba means that there are 24 ply. Because the Torah tells us that the objects were made out of tchelet, argaman, tolad shani, and sheish. So they're made out of those 4 materials. If you tell me each one of those is mashzar, 6 ply, and then I twist those all together, I get 24 ply. Each string that was there was 24 strings worth, or twisted, into make a single string. Depending how thin the strings are, it kind of takes on like a, more of a string or a ropey feel to it. Tane, 32, there were actually 32 ply. Ilo amar chut, had you told me chut, I would have thought 1. Echad. Kaful, if you told me double, I would say shnaim, that there are 2 there. Shazur, la'arba, I would have done twice as many, I would have done 4 ply if you told me that. Now that you told me mashzar, it's the shmona. That's 8. Arba mikain, or arba minin again, the 4 different types. Hatzlatim etaydim, 4 times 8 is 32. So 32 ply according to this. Tana, we have another braita that says, arba mishmona, 48. Ilo amar chut, teret zed chut, echad, I would have thought it was 1 ply. Kaful, l'shnayim, 2 ply. Klia is l'shlosha, is 3 ply. Shazur, 6 ply, shisha. Mashzar, l'shemazar, 12 ply. Arba amikain, or arba minim, you have the 4 different types of materials. So 4 times 12, harbaim, tamnyo, that's 48. So it was 48 ply, each of these. Yeah, the Gemara moves up. Katuva chadomer, one of the pasuk says, masse rokein. Gechuda, taguva chadomer, masse choshev. Certain of the items in the Mikdash were made out of masse choshev, like the ephod, and like the parochet. Others were made out of masse rokein. And the Gemara wants to know, what's the difference between masse choshev and masse rokein? So, the Gemara answers, masse rokein, patsuf echad. Masse rokein means there's 1 face. Masse choshev, shnei partsufot. Means that there are 2 faces, right? So there are 2 ways to read that. You can either read it that rokein means patsuf echad, and you can only see whatever you stitched, or the pattern on one side, because it was stitched on top. Masei choshev means shnei partsufot, means that it was woven in there, into the actual tapestry, and there you can see the same thing, the opposite image, but the same thing on both sides. That's 1 way to read it. The other way to read it is masei rokein is patsuf echad, means that whatever was there, you could see on both sides, because there's only 1 partsuf. Whereas by Masei Choshev, Shnei Partsufot, that you could make something different on each side. Right? So there's 2 different ways you can read this. And we have a machloket here, and the girsa is not so easy. So we're going to go along with the girsa that the Gra brings, which seems to be the proper girsa over here, which is Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia, 2 Tanaim in the 4th generations, argue. And now in the girsa of the Gra. Chadamar Masei Rokeim. When you talk about the Masei Rokeim, it's Arimikan. V'chalak mikan. It's an ari on one side, and it's blank on the other side. You can't see it on the other side. Right? I'm going over that interpretation that patsuf echad means that you only see it on one stitched on the top, so therefore you only see it on one side. So that means ari mikan, v'chalak mikan. Masei choshev, when it's masei choshev, it means an ari mikan, v'ari mikan. You can see both sides. V'charana amar, the other one says, masei rokeim, the masei rokeim is ari mikan, v'ari mikan. You have ari on both sides. Masei choshev is ari mikan and nesher mikan. You have an ari on one side and the nesher on the other side. So now, either you can say that they're arguing about exactly that. What does chad partsuf and shtei partsufot mean? Does chad partsuf mean you can see it straight through? And shtei partsuf means on top. The 2 different ways that I gave the explanation for, that might be the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia. Or, it might be they agree that it's stitched on the outside and it's 2 different images. One says Ari Ari and one says Ari Nasher. That's what they could be saying. Or they could actually be arguing about that. Is it 1 Ari that can be seen from both sides? Or is it really an Ari and a Nasher because it's stitched on the top? They might argue what Masei Choshev means. Hard to know. That is a machloket here, exactly how Masei Rokeim and Masei Choshev worked. Continue. The Gemara says, Yishmoni Mishtayim Ribo Hayitai Nesait. Some say that there was a Tani here, that this is a Braita that the Gemara is quoting. Others saying it's just quoting the Mishnah over here, and it's quoting the Chule is the important part of it. It's not clear why this piece was brought down at all. Now, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bizna, it's Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bizna, the 3rd, 4th generation of Amora, so b'shem Shmuel. He's quoting Shmuel in Bavel, the 1st generation of Amora in Bavel, Guzma. The 300 Kohanim in our Mishnah is an exaggeration. Taman Taninan, we have a Mishnah in Tamid, which also we're going to see in Yoma as well, which is Pamim Aya Alea Keshlosh Miot Kur. There's sometimes that the pile of ashes in the center of the Mizbeach, called the Tapuach, had on it 300 kor of ashes. Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Bone is a fifth generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. B'shem Shmuel, again, quoting Shmuel, Guzma, it's an exaggeration. So what you learn from here is that anytime the Mishnah uses the term 300, that is an exaggeration. So that's what he's teaching us here, that 300 in the Mishnah doesn't mean literally, it means an exaggeration. Basar kodshei kodashim, shnitma ben ba'avatumah ben v'ladatumah. The basar of kodshei kodashim that comes to me, kodshei kodashim are going to be in the Azara. Whether it becomes tamei with an avatumah, whether it comes tamei with a vladatumah, ben bifnim ben bachutz, whether it's inside or outside, beit shamay omim akol yisareif bifnim. Everything gets brought back into the Azara to a place where they burn all of these problematic kodashim. Chutz mishnitma avatumah bachutz. Except for the item that's the highest level of tumah, the avatumah, that was outside the Azara, that we don't bring in, we burn that on the outside. Beit shamay omim says the other way around. Akof yisareif bachutz. Everything is burnt on the outside. Chutz mishnitma bevladatumah bifnim. Except something that has a lighter tumah inside. So for Beit Hillel, everything's on the outside except for the lightest tumah that was had the tamei or the tumah come inside, then it's burnt inside. For Beit Shammai is the default is everything's inside except for the case where it's the most extreme tumah and it happened outside, that remains on the outside. Rabbi Eliezer ben Urkunus says, Omer shnitma b'ava tumah ben bifnim ben bechutz. If it's an ava tumah, whether inside or outside, bechutz, it gets burnt on the outside. Shnitma b'vlada tumah ben bechutz ben bifnim yisareif bifnim. On the other hand, if it's Vlada Tumah, whether outside or inside, it gets burnt on the inside. So Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus says that the difference is the level of the Tumah. That's the only thing that matters. If it's an Ava Tumah, it's outside. If it's a Vlada Tumah, it's on the inside. Rabbi Kiva Omer comes up with the final position, which is Makom Tumato Sham Srifato. Where it became Tameh, that's where it gets burnt. We don't move anything. Wherever the Tumah happened, that's where it gets burnt and taken care of. We don't move from inside to outside or outside to inside. Doesn't matter level of Tumah. Wherever the Tumah happens, that's where we burn it. Okay, we'll stop over here.